Hey guys, how are we doing this morning? Come on, more energy. This is, we got like really smart people up here. I'm not me, them. Okay. So today we're going to do a little panel on our EMV committee. We are the RSPA EMV committee. We meet once a month via phone. We have a bunch of smart people that get on the phone and kind of brainstorm and give updates in the industry, some what's going on, so that we can serve the RSPA members better. We also put together education series, webinars, and we put together any kind of documents that the members may be needing to be able to do their job better in the field. So I want to introduce our team of experts today. We have Ali from Moneris. We have Ray from Vantiv. We have Mark Cleven with Visa. We have Mark from Cayenne. Two Marks, and they spell their names exactly the same, so we're going to have a Marky Mark contest. We have Gabriella with Discover, and we have Matt with eMobile. Okay? So I just want to give a shout-out to these guys. I am the luckiest person in the RSBA committee. I get to get on the phone with them once a month and learn all kinds of interesting stuff for absolutely free. I'm a very lucky lady. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and just start off with some questions. And if you guys have any questions that you want to interject, feel free to raise your hand. We want to make this as educational as possible for you. We also want to hear back from you what you need more from us. Okay, so if you are lacking something that you need RSPA EMV committee to do better, please let us know. Okay, so Mark with Visa, I'm going to start off with you. Here's the hard question. What is the state of EMV in the U.S. today?
So just briefly, obviously we're still very much in the thrust of moving forward. It's interesting that we already have more chip cards issued in the U.S. than in any country globally. So you've got all these other countries, Brazil, have been chipped for a long time. But they're obviously smaller countries, so just the percentage that we've got. We have a very aggressive deployment of chip cards. I anticipate by the end of the year that virtually all credit cards will have a chip on them, and that probably 60% of the debit cards will have chips on them. On the merchant side, obviously, the complexities of the U.S. market have created a lot of challenges, so we're doing a lot of work to try and address those complexities, both as Visa as well as the participants in the EMV Migration Forum. So there are things being done. We've seen continuing improvements, the reduction in the time to test and certify, which we know has been a bottleneck. So there's a lot going on, and we're probably at about a million merchant locations right now doing chip. Merchant location being the store, could be a multi-lane store, but a million merchant locations currently they're doing chip.
Gabriella, are we seeing any benefits to the EMV adoption yet? In the U.S.?
Well, yes. Like Mark mentioned, the adoption from the issuing side has been great. A recent study showed that many issuers are on the path to implement EMV to reissue the whole portfolio. Most indicated that plan to be done next year, end of next year. Of course, they started first with the higher spending accounts, and that represent the majority of the portfolio, and then moving on to the other cardholders. Also from the, it's too early, unfortunately, it is too early to be measuring success from the counterfeit reduction, although some studies are showing that it is being reduced. However, keep in mind that in most markets, the reduction, took at least 2 years. And given the complexity of the U.S. Implementation structure, it could take a little bit longer here in the U.S. From the cardholder perspective, many issuers were, fearing that cardholders would not adjust to the new way of making payments that easily. However, it's not been the case. Most cardholders are taking and very happy to take their chip cards to the merchants, and it's interesting to see that in some places they have to put a sign, just swipe your card, because many people is trying to insert which is a great behavior to see from the cardholder perspective.
Ray, from the processing side, are you seeing, what's your perspective on the reduction in counterfeit or?
Again, it's a little bit too early to measure that, but a recent study showed a small decrease in counterfeit.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same, that it's great for the merchants who have implemented EMV, that it's going to reduce their counterfeit card-present fraud. We had one of the card brands tell us that their top five merchants that implemented it have seen a 61% decrease in that counterfeit transaction volume. I think the tough thing is going to be, especially as we reach saturation in the enterprise tier one merchant space, that fraud isn't going to go away, right? It's going to follow the path of least resistance and move down market into middle size and SMB merchant customers who haven't yet implemented. So fraud's not going to stop until we get saturation for all card present accepting merchants. At that point in time, it'll shift online. But for now, there's still a target-rich environment at mid-market space. So it's good we're seeing strong adoption, but the ones that don't is where the fraud's going to move.
So Ray and Mark, Ray and Mark, you guys were at the EMV migration forum in June. What were the top three things that were discussed? What were the issues that were brought up? What was the feedback that you received?
So I think the top three things. There was the so-called quick chip, or sometimes referred to as faster EMV, the announcements by all four major brands. In terms of a process to speed up chip at the acceptance, or at least the perception of chip acceptance by the merchants. I think the second topic was there were a lot of questions about what's going on with chargebacks and how the, once the liability shifts has kicked in, how the chargebacks begin moving, of course. And finally, I think the time it takes to do testing and certification. In conjunction with that, there have been some industry initiatives to improve testing and certification cycles. And interestingly, QuickChip plays into implementation of QuickChip as a shorter development, testing, and certification cycle. So there was a lot of interest in QuickChip from that aspect.
Yeah, so those would have to be three big hot-button items. In response to that, the EMS just recently published a white paper on chargeback best practices. We're also working on an EMV optimization, so for transaction speed, which involves things like quick chip, EMV contactless, and ways to speed up that overall transaction process, both from a merchant as well as an issuing side. And for those of you that aren't familiar with EMF, it's the EMV Migration Forum. It's where, acquirers, issuers, the card brands, as well as merchant customers come together really collaboratively and try to discuss the issues. So it's always interesting when you get merchants in a room with issuing banks, but it's very collaborative, very good discussion, good dialogue. But those are the three big hot-button items that we heard. And I think the other one definitely that, was the hallway conversations was around, again, we're starting to see strong adoption in the enterprise merchant space as well as in standalone terminal merchants. It's how do we attack aggressively that middle market merchant or that small merchant customer that's using integrated point of sale. So it's becoming more and more of a top issue for us.
And I just want to add on to that. The EMF website, by the way, is a great resource for information. There's lots of white papers, lots of discussion, lots of webinars for training your own staff as well as training your customers.
Thank you, guys. Matt, we're hearing a lot about tip adjustment, pay at the table. What are the acceptable tip collection methods in this new EMV era?
Well, I'll provide some perspectives, of course, from the point of view of an ISV, right, the POS software developer. Essentially, what we see is merchants are trying to stick to what they're accustomed to. Essentially. In fine dining environment, it's frowned upon to ask the consumer to go back to the counter where their countertop terminal may reside if they want to collect a tip in advance before they run the chip and pin. So even in the dawn of chip and pin environment, merchants are presenting checks, allowing the customers to review and potentially enter the tip in advance and then take it back, run the transaction, and perhaps bring the card back for a signature in a chip and signature environment, or bring the device back for ultimate pin entry. So we see that old way of doing business perpetuating, just slightly adjusting to the device that's being used, whether it's chip and PIN or chip and signature. There are some restaurant operators that we know are doing tip adjustment to the transaction that's been consummated. And I'll let those smart people that you reference on our committee to my left answer how that's done and what the limitations are there, which I learned from them, so I let them answer that. But there's that as well. So the pre-check is presented, and then the customer is they insert their card, they close out the check. Of course, they write the tip amount, and they go back and adjust that tip to a certain limit. So that's happening now. Pay at the table is not moving along quite at the pace we expected, and I think that's primarily because of those habits, hard to break, long outstanding habits right now. But I think over time I can see that U.S. merchants and consumers adapting the behavior. Let's say the three quarters of the world has in terms of pay at the table and tip insertion prior to the actual execution of the card payment. But it's not there yet. At least the behavior is not there yet.
Right. Mark, can you elaborate on what the challenges have been on the tip adjustment?
Yeah, so we serve a number of ISVs like Matt and obviously retailers and hospitality across the board. And it's interesting that in the U.S., one, we're not used to pay at the table, right? So up internationally, it's happening all over the place, but us as consumers show up at the table, we're just not used to it. So there's some odd customer fears about PIN entry, and there's odd customer fears about tipping in front of waiters and things like that. And we hope that'll go away at some point. So the other challenge we run into, though, is if you have an ISV that hasn't been international and they're just U.S. only, their systems, from a technology standpoint, aren't set up for this pay-at-the-table flow. So there's an interesting predicament where, they're used to basically doing a retail experience at the server station where it's pay, swipe, EMV, if you will, and then it's closed. So they're not used to open checks. So we have one thing where we're trying to get some ISVs to pull through and understand that there might be multiple payments happening at the same time out at different tables. We're helping people through that. And then from a technology standpoint, we all know, and we'll talk more about why EMV is still challenging, but pay-at-the-table EMV solutions are still a challenge because that's a phase two for a lot of people, right? We had to get the retail countertop. I can say from a restaurant perspective, just to step back for Matt's comments for a minute, we are certainly seeing EMV acceptance at restaurants today, a table service, and what they're doing is doing EMV at the server station. So they're still walking away with your card, which obviously isn't a best practice, but they are performing EMV. But they're leveraging things like PIN bypass to get through the transaction and still get the benefits of EMV. So one thing we always talk about is that you get the benefit of EMV and the reduction of counterfeit by just using the chip. So PIN is great for lost and stolen, and that's a whole other conversation we probably won't go too deep into today. But by benefiting from the chip itself, they can still get the protection from counterfeit, chargeback protection, and then move from there.
I want to make one last comment to kind of circle back with between what I said and what Mark suggested. I think it's incumbent upon us as the various contributing elements of the channel to set up the merchants with technologies that would service the needs today in their transition period and the needs for tomorrow. So I would implore all of our business partners, dealers in the channel, to look for those technologies that would not only help them execute EMV transactions with kind of similar to the way they're operating today, but also allow them the opportunity to pay at the table, the pure pay at the table capabilities as they move forward, as the behavior shifts over time.
I just wanted to add quickly, I agree with what was just said, but I think also we need to, if our client is trying to get to EMV, we may need to be laser focused on that. When somebody comes to me and says, I need to change my business process because of chip, I always ask them why, because I don't find that necessarily to be true. So you can take today's, if they're doing tip adjustments in the back room, there's no reason to arbitrarily change that because of the implementation of EMB. So I think the business proposition of pay the table is interesting and it stands on its own, but it doesn't necessarily need to be tied to an EMB migration. So I just want to be clear on that point.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be an evolution to that solution. Again, pay the table is great for if you want to have a pin print card and want to get that pin. If not, you can do the weight station checkout now, configuring it as chip and signature only. As Mark kind of alluded to, when you configure it as chip and sig only, with Visa, you're protected against counterfeit chargebacks, and there's no loss and stolen liability shift with Visa. MasterCard, Amex, and Discover do have a liability shift on a PIN preferring card. So if the card wants a PIN and the terminal only a signature, that merchant could be liable for loss and stolen fraud. Then when you look at the whole pie of how much of the fraud we see is counterfeit versus loss and stolen, heavily weighted toward counterfeit. So counterfeit fraud is this an authentic card? Loss and stolen is the actual cardholder performing the transaction. So loss and stolen, typically crime of opportunity. You lose your card, it gets stolen. Counterfeit is compromised data that's then used to create a counterfeit card. So when you read the chip, as Mark said, you're getting the benefit of counterfeit. You know it's an authentic card. Loss and stolen is really what's prevented with chip and PIN.
I just wanted to add too. I mean, working with your acquirer and other partners to understand the situation because it helps to understand. Visa cards don't do chip and PIN right now. American Express has a loss and stolen liability shift, but 100% of their cards issued in the United States don't support PIN yet. So, the actual exposure for loss and stolen is actually fairly modest.
And eventually, as well Matt mentioned, on ISV partner, POS provider, and processor and POS provider to educate the merchant the benefit of pay at table, other than the EMV, of course, which is essential, that helps their business. Let's say some of the pay at table devices and integrations eliminates the need to go back to the pay station to close the table. So once you do the transaction with the customer, they insert their card, accept the amount, enter the tip amount, enter their PIN, the device is capable of communicating back to the pay station and close the table. So the server can continue doing what they're doing on the floor without having to go back and forth to the pay station. This is one of the advantages of a pay at table with EMV capability for fine dining and sit-in restaurant.
Thank you, guys. So we're going to move over just a little bit and change the topic to gateways. Mark and Ray, since it's kind of your forte, how challenging is it for gateway providers to get multiple devices certified for multiple acquirers? What's the process and what's the cost?
So I can start with that one. We do certify to multiple acquirers, and we actually certify to multiple hardware. I usually say, as a private company, I can speak very frankly, but my CEO's in the room, so I can't speak very frankly. But at the end of the day, EMV is still very difficult, right? We've had, to be frank, acquirers certified since October, and we are seeing challenges today, right? And they're new challenges, so we're moving on, and we'll touch chargebacks and things like that for a moment. But we're falling into things like fallback scenarios, and we're still going back to those certifications because, honestly, specifications are changing. So it's interesting that everybody in the ecosystem is all there at some level, but now all of us working together, we're uncovering dead bodies along the way. That being said, we're frankly seeing with the new Magstripe efforts with certification queues, not queues, but the actual effort of getting it done, and then EMV behind it, you're looking at 4 to 6 or even 8 months for a certification for a certain acquirer. And a lot of that is just the back and forth, right? People are still learning it up and down the chain, and it's pretty ugly right now. The thing I always like to say to resellers like yourselves is, the partners you're working with, they're honestly having difficulty working up and down the chain. So, you're still looking for partners to work with that you can have a good communication path with, you want to keep up to date. There's nothing shady under the covers happening. It's just a bit of a disaster. Everybody is busy with it, and the challenge is it's a bandwidth thing, right? We knew years ago, actually, at the EMF, that certification was an impossibility. So everybody to get certified from a resource standpoint, it was like 15 man years or 20 man years or hundreds of thousands of employees to actually do what we needed to do here in the U.S. So it is an evolving beast, but the good news is everybody's starting to get in order. Things are starting to churn through, and we're at least understanding the pace, right? Once the dust has settled and things have stabilized, we're all starting to see a little bit of momentum with it. It's just a lot longer effort, And those that want to get involved with the certification, it's a commitment. It's not a one-time investment. It wasn't a team that gets allocated. This is something that those that want to get involved, especially from a gateway perspective, have teams built, funded, and will continue to because it's an ongoing effort.
Yeah, I think the other challenge when you're going with an open gateway strategy, you're trying to connect to multiple acquirers. We have our own certification processes. So obviously, we can control the prioritization of that certification queue, so we can get the things we need to through that queue as needed. But there's no consistency across acquirers in terms of the EMV toolkits they use, and even if they're using the same toolkits, what their processes are from a day-to-day operational standpoint of getting someone through the queue. So I think some of the challenges we've seen as we try to get our own certifications done is also pull folks through our certification queue is getting used to that process. It typically is that first device is the challenge. That second, third, fourth device go through fairly quickly because you're past that what's called a host certification. Now you're just doing the device certification. So the first one's always the most challenging. Then you get used to the tool, you get used to the processes, and those add-on devices go on much faster. As Mark mentioned, some of the card brands have announced even more empowerment of the merchant acquirers to have a self-certification status. I think that'll help us a lot where, we can actually trust the initial, terminal certifications of some of our competitors and vice versa. So then we can do our host certification, making sure it reaches our front end correctly and feel confident that it's going to get up to the card brands properly. So all the things we're doing within the industry to streamline that certification process should help our internal processes, the tool manufacturers, and help us bring more solutions to market. But definitely, I'd say, challenge for those, gateway and middleware providers that are trying to connect multiple devices to multiple acquirers. I think the other wave we're going to see throughout the rest of this year in 2017 is what I'll call kind of the EMV 2.0. Everyone was scrambling to get certifications done, get something to market prior to liability shifts. So we did, most folks did the bare minimum EMV contact credit only certification. If you want to go back and add EMV debit, the U.S. Common Debit AIDs, you want to add PIN bypass, you want to add EMV contactless, you're going to have to come back in and recertify and make sure you didn't break anything. If you want to add quick chip, at a minimum, you're doing some level of regression testing, may have to do some recertification depending on what brands you're implementing. So it's not going away. It's going to be, now that we've gotten through the initial phase and seen some solutions to market, all those are going to come back, recertify for enhanced feature functionality.
Adding on to what Ray mentioned, I just want to comment on the commitment, and Mark can attest to these, of the networks to try to make the certification process simplified. So there is an actual committee within EMF working on simplifying certifications. There's also an effort from each one of the networks to look at the current process and try to simplify, reduce the number of test cases to speed the time to market. From our perspective, from Discover, we have already certified 5 acquirers to do self-certifications, and they've been doing it for a while. So we don't touch anything on those certifications. The acquirers, the processors do everything themselves. So there is a commitment, and more will be coming to make it easier on our partners to get to the market as soon as possible.
Yeah, I have a question and questions for our audience. If I can have a show of hands for those of you who, with some regularity, work with gateways, either you provision the account or the POS provider provisions the gateway account. Can I see a show? Okay, maybe one-third, maybe one-quarter of our audience. So, especially in the dawn of EMV, I think it's important to take another look at gateway operations and potentially seek out one or two that make sense for you in several ways. One, your ISV may not necessarily have completed integration to the acquirer relationship that you already have in place, and there might be a gateway option for that. And two, it'll present you additional acquirer relationships, especially in the sense that you will have customers insisting on working with certain acquirers. So this is the rebirth of Gateway. EMV presents a lot of opportunities for all of us in the channel, and there has been some historical reluctance in the past working with gateways just because of the additional cost layer. But then again, the cost of not working with them today, if you're not delivering the proper EMV solution with the choice of the acquirer the customer is looking for is far greater than working with the gateway operator. Then you also have gateway operations such as the one like Cayenne, where it's bundled with acquiring services as well, so that gives you some additional opportunities or movement opportunities in the future too. And of course, we're talking about EMV 2.0, some additional flavors and developments in the marketplace. The gateway operators will keep you sort of out of scope, your merchant out of scope, will handle everything in the back end, and will give you smooth sailing throughout the course of your engagement with that acquirer, the merchant, and the gateway operator. So it is an interesting relationship that you might want to explore. You know, if you're working with Moneris, for example, you may not necessarily have a solution that you're looking for. A gateway operator might give you that connectivity to Moneris with the type of device that's most suitable for that operator, or the merchant, rather, and will get you to Moneris and get you to Moneris very quickly today. So I just want to offer that kind of an advice.
Just to a little bit touch base again on the certification process, and I know Mark and Ray talked about it specifically from gateway perspective. The certification itself, really, it's hard to come up with timelines, especially when a gateway provider is running certification for multiple devices or multiple environments to provide an EMV solution end-to-end. Most of the time usually spent in development and communication back to the entity or to the processor who's conducting the certification or verifying the certification results. So that timelines between communication, development effort, and going back and forth, start certification, fail on some testing, go back to the developer, redevelop again. So it adds up. And all of this, you know, having the gateway do all the effort and handle this, they usually have more experience with EMV because they run multiple certification and they will know how to avoid kind of those type of errors or mistakes or development timelines. And they have dedicated team. I agree with you, Mark, on that. So, but in terms of timelines, it's really kind of we have to look at each solution separately and see what type of integration it is, because you know, you may have a gateway or you may not. It can be the POS out of scope of certification or not. And essentially, you have the payment application and the device, and if there is a gateway, the gateway as well in scope. So all of this combined get us to how long the certification may take. So some certification, like semi-integrated solution, you may be out of scope of certification because the device as a standalone is already certified by the provider or the processor. But when we have a gateway provider, then we're looking at certifying every piece of the point of sale that handles the payment.
Thank you, guys. Ray, what are the impacts of chargebacks rights if only implementing chip and signature?
Yeah, so we touched based on a little bit earlier. And again, there's a lot of documentation out there, either on the EMF website or, you know, definitely merchant acquirers. And we have a pretty nice matrix that our compliance team's put together. But the rule of thumb is that the liability shifts to the least secure party in the transaction. So with the exception of Visa, again, Visa says basically if you're reading the chip, you're covered from a liability standpoint that's going back on the issuing bank at that point in time. For the other brands, it's going to shift to the least secure party. So if the chip card is chip and sig preferring and the merchant can support chip and signature, it's going to shift back to the issuing bank. The big time when, you know, the merchant's enabled chip and signature, but the card is chip and pin preferring, and it's a lost and stolen counter or lost and stolen card, that can shift back to the merchant. That they're not, you know, they're only doing signature, they're not able to get that pin. They're the least secure part of the transaction because the card wanted a pin. Merchant only supports signature. That's when the merchant can become liable again. So that's the typical rule of thumb we've seen is it's going to shift to the least secure party.
Gabriella and Mark from Visa, can you give us just an overview of how QuickChip, MChip, all of this, how it works, what are the benefits, what's the certification process, where are we at?
Sure.
So, you know, QuickChip is basically a response to the market that indicated, hey, transactions, EMV transactions are taking too long. It's honestly also a perception because with the regular EMV transaction, the transaction doesn't start until, you know, the amount of the transaction is known, the final amount. So if you are on a grocery situation, you're scanning your items, you know, you're not able to insert your car until everything has been scanned. So in that scenario, QuickChip, you know, it seems as a solution because, you know, the car holder is able to insert their car at any point when the, you know, scanning process is still going on. And the car holder is able to put their car back on their pocket faster, which also addresses some concerns with, you know, leaving your car at the terminal because you forget, you're not used to it. So, you know, again, it is a modification of the regular EMV transaction where, you know, it triggers the terminal so the car could be removed from the reader early on. It uses a what we call like a, you know, proxy amount where, you know, depending on your settings, you could set up that amount to be used for the cryptogram and the online authorization. Another big difference is everything related to QuickChip transactions has to go online. So it, that's a way for the issuer to be able to approve that transaction. So again, it is a response to that perception. Is it good for all business models? May not be good for all business models. And also keep in mind that because everything is going online, you know, there are certain features with EMV that are lost, like offline approvals. You know, that's not an option. Everything has to go online. And also some considerations with the, that proxy amount, because you're using a proxy amount, you have to select that amount carefully. To avoid, you know, if you are too low, you may be, based on the CBMs, you may be required to capture a signature. If you if the amount is too low, you know, you get into the maybe the no CBM scenario. From the certification requirements, I guess there is some differences between the different networks. From, you know, Discover and I believe other two networks, there is some certification required. If you're doing a certification for the first time, there is a reduced number of test cases that have to be completed from the end-to-end certification perspective. If you already certify for EMV, there is a requirement to do some regression testing if you already did the whole pass with EMV.
So I think, yeah, there are two pieces in the secret sauce for QuickChip. The first one was mentioned using a proxy amount instead of waiting for the final amount to get the all-important cryptogram from the card. And the second piece is that the there is a process in order to complete the EMV processing so that the card is satisfied and can be removed. So there's kind of a second step, and part of that also says I'm not going to wait for the authorization response to come back as far as the EMV processing is concerned. Obviously, the issuer decision still is the disposition of the transaction as far as releasing the goods and so on. So those two pieces are QuickChip, and those don't change the fundamentals of EMV processing. There's just a little bit of reordering in some cases, but it does take EMV processing out of the critical path of the user interface and gives the designer more freedom in how they prompt for chip and allow the card to be returned to the cardholder quickly. The opportunities are because it is an online-only solution, then you can eliminate offline support from your development, particularly if you're going in as a QuickChip process. In other words, instead of implementing EMV and then later doing QuickChip, you actually go in as a QuickChip implementation in the first case. Then you've eliminated the offline processing because it's not available, which has knock-on consequences then for all your development testing and certification. And then plus there's also some very active work being done, in fact, by one of my colleagues over here, Cindy Kohler, in order to try and reduce the testing and certification cycles necessary in order to get a QuickChip implementation to market quickly.
I'd like to add as well here on the QuickChip topic. It is very important for merchants to know, does QuickChip apply, or not necessarily apply, but is, does it help their business from payment perspective, or they need full EMV? Because if they adopt QuickChip, if they are still non-EMV enabled or capable and they move to QuickChip and realize down the road, no, we should have done full EMV, that may as well add more effort to go back and recertify again for full EMV. So it's very careful to for the merchant to understand whether QuickChip is the right solution for them to move to EMV or to go full EMV. As well, another thing, maybe there is an opportunity here for contactless payment if the concern is the speed of the line. Take an example, grocery stores. I mean, the contactless option experience in Canada, at least, or in the rest of the world where contactless payment is a huge. Most of the grocery stores, they some of them, they have even limit up to $200 where you just all you need to tap your card. So there are so many options, but the merchant needs to be really make the right choice whether to go QuickChip or full EMV or add contactless from the get-go as well.
I'm going to throw this out to the team. You mentioned that there are some business cases where QuickChip makes sense. Can you give us some scenarios?
Probably quick restaurant and then grocery, because you can start a transaction, you know, while the goods are being scanned. So that's a couple of models that I think will be, you know, QuickChip will be best utilized.
Yeah, grocery is a great example of something where you have a number of goods that have to get rung up, and then so any time that there's that kind of that gap, and it could be too. You might have a dial-up environment where your authorization time takes a while. So if you want to eliminate that perception, because the cardholder is staring at the card, nothing is going on. The card's not doing anything. It's waiting for something. So if you can supply that final amount, use a proxy amount in lieu of the final amount. You can say, let's not wait for the authorization response to come back as far as EMV processing. So those are the opportunities. So, I mean, yeah, if you have a merchant who has a very, you've got a really good implementation, the merchant's seen very good response on today's classic EMV processing, they're probably not an opportunity, certainly not an opportunity probably to go back and replace what they've got with QuickChip. On the other hand, if you're, there are a number of merchants who, as I say, if you're going QuickChip in the first place, it may be appropriate, even if they don't have a dramatic time in line for the waiting on the card.
So Ali mentioned the tap, the NFC technology, very popular in Canada. One of the reasons is because they have the dual interface cards. They have the chip, the NFC chip within the card. Gabriella, Mark, do you see the U.S. issuers issuing dual interface cards? And if so, when?
You know, dual interface cards, of course, are more expensive. So it's something that, you know, issuers have to consider really carefully. The U.S. is more looking, you know, more into moving to mobile, you know, payments using wallets. So that's where contactless support, you know, becomes really important so that you can enable or help your merchants enable those contactless payments. And, you know, a question that I get all the time is, like, you know, can you do a mobile payment as MaxStripe? And the answer is yes, because, you know, contactless payments could be done in two different ways. You can do it as a MaxStripe transaction or you can do it as an EMV transaction. Which one is more secure? Of course, the EMV transaction, because it has all of the cryptograms and all of the validations that, you know, are part of an EMV transaction. However, MaxStripe is still secure. You know, there is some dynamic data that is part of a contactless MaxStripe version that is still better than just the regular MaxStripe transaction. So, you know, again, going back to the question, are we going to see any contactless cards, maybe not issued by large issuers, but maybe more into the closed loop towards the transit systems that are already utilizing contactless. So maybe just a closed loop where you can just also buy a few things around the transit stations, train stations, or other train systems. Transit systems are already leveraging the contactless technology.
Yeah, so I'll second that. So, yeah, touch over 90% of all the cards issued in Canada are dual interface cards. So there's certainly been a great interest there. I think in the U.S. we're going to see some issuance of dual interface cards into some mass transit markets. So an issuer who says, you know, this person lives in this city and that's a common use for the card, you're going to see some growth of dual interface there. But I think for the most part, it's going to be the support for the mobile there. And so there'll be some there. I was going to make another point, and it just flew out of my mind, so I'll bring it back up.
Yeah, I'll just add on to that a little bit. So we definitely have benefit. We have merchant acquiring business. We also are a FI EFT debit processor and debit card issuer. So we've certified to support EMV contactless cards on our issuing side of the business with both MasterCard and Visa. And we have yet to really have an issuer bite off on it. I think we need to have the functionality to respond well to RFPs, but we have not had anyone demanding that. I think we see a higher demand for, frankly, EMV instant issuance cards. So when you open up an account in the branch, instantly get a chip-enabled card in the branch. We started to roll that out, as well as, frankly, ATM-only chip cards. You know, we thought that would be a lower demand option, but that's starting to become a higher demand. So the support's out there, I'd say, with many of the issuing processors, but just the demand hasn't caught up. I think when we see the next reissuance cycle, again, just as merchants were scrambling to get something into market, issuers are doing the same, and financial institutions are doing the same, trying to get chip-enabled cards out there and trying to make that business case, because the cards are more expensive. Then you add EMV contactless capability to that card, it becomes, you know, I think it's about quadruple the cost of a traditional EMV card. So I think we'll see that possibly in the next reissuance cycle.
And you reminded me what I was going to say. So there are two modes, the MagTripe mode and the EMV contactless mode. And if the merchant is supporting EMV, Visa strongly recommends that they support the EMV contactless flavor. And, in fact, we allow merchants to drop support for the MagStripe flavor. And I'll comment, it's easier to piggyback if you already got an EMV implementation to do the EMV contactless implementation. But just from a practical standpoint, I'm on both the EMV Co interoperability working group and the Visa's internal interoperability working committee. And we see a number of problems with the contactless MagStripe that don't exist in the EMV contactless world. So we pretty strongly recommend that merchants just move strictly to that if they're doing EMV contact.
I'd like also to go back as well to what Gabriella mentioned early on about this question related to the speed of the transaction. The merchant sometimes thinks that EMV transaction or chip and PIN transaction takes longer than MagStripe transaction. And technically, it does, while it does take a little bit longer, but that length of time between EMV chip transaction and MagStripe transaction is not something that user or customer or merchant can notice. It's in milliseconds technically for the approval of the transaction, for the process of the transaction altogether. But it's mainly the slow or the delay of the reaction of the customer entering the PIN, the new process, that's what usually slows down the line and slows down the transaction, not the actual processing of an EMV transaction.
Okay. So we're kind of running against the clock. While we have these guys up here, and ladies, sorry, I say guys like I say y'all. So Matt, starting with you, give us in 60 seconds or less best practice, best piece of advice, best nugget of wisdom around EMV that you can give the audience.
Well, Biana, I thought you forgot about me.
I could never forget about you.
I don't know if any of you remember the presidential debate by CNN when Wolf Pillitzer finally turned to Dr. Ben Carson. Well, Wolf, you forgot about me. So, anyway, best practices, right? I think it's a compilation of some of the suggestions we made earlier. Essentially, as the trusted advisors, it is upon you to provide options to your merchants. Please consider all of these requirements. You need to educate yourselves about the differences between contactless, contact, tip adjustments, the limits in tip adjustment, which I learned, by the way, is up to 20%. Anything above 20% is the merchant's liability, but only to the extent that equates to the amount over 20%. and things of that nature. I mean, I think there's a lot of knowledge to be had. I think we all need to learn and educate our merchants, give them solutions that would not only support them today, but in the future as well. Contactless payments especially will likely become the most prevalent form of redemption with the dawn of millennials, you know, using their phones to tap and go everywhere as they use it for anything, everything else, including their regular day-to-day communications today. So that's my 2 cents.
Thank you. Gabriella?
So as Beata mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, the reason for this committee to exist is to serve you. So use us to your advantage. You know, bring up to this committee what are the topics that you need to learn more about so we can schedule webinars, you know, conferences, you know, even bring your questions up to us so we can help you and use our collective knowledge to help the community. You know, it is all our objective to make sure that EMV is as smooth as possible. The other thing that I observe, like working with different merchants and ISVs and VARs, is choosing your partners carefully. Because, you know, I've seen many stock on not being able to deploy EMV to their merchants because their partners are not ready. So keeping that communication going with your partners, knowing where they are on the EMV migration journey is very important, you know, and having option A and B so you're not stuck with A because they're not ready.
Mark?
So we're going to echo each other probably down the line a lot, but to echo Matt there, it is all about the relationship you have now. He mentioned the evolution, you know, this is EMV is an evolution. So, you know, it's our responsibility to help educate you, and it's your responsibility to help educate your merchants. And it's going to be an ongoing conversation. There's going to be much evolving over the next few years. It's great from a relationship standpoint, but as resellers, you know, you need to keep educating people. We talk about QuickChip, that's a new thing today. You know, we'll certainly all be implementing it because it's a great technology to help speed along the process, but there is a use case there where you want it to fit and you want to make sure it works. And beyond that, you know, it's on that continuing education is the thing that's going to keep you guys in touch with the retailers and merchants. So work very closely with your chosen solution providers. Make sure they're serving your needs well. Make sure they're serving the retailers' needs well, because we're kind of all in this together, and we just want to make sure that it works going down the and moving through all of this, because it's a little bit turbulent, and it'll get better, and it is, but there's a lot of changes that are still going to happen.
And I think one of the things I would focus on and suggest is keeping a laser focus on your business requirements and having your customers, you know, look at your current business processes, to saying this to the client, and we need to support those. When you start talking about changing your business process, have a very good reason for that, because there are knock-on implications in terms of you know, development, testing, and certification. And Visa's approach has been, let's keep it streamlined, let's keep it simple, let's keep it fast. So let's get to the goal line, which is a tsunami of, you know, fraud chargebacks that's coming. You know, let's get ahead of that. And some of these secondary functions are in fact add-ons and can be deferred.
Yeah, I think I'll go more with the lesson learned. I think the lesson learned I see in the marketplace is many assume that getting the PIN pads, getting the applications EMV certified was going to then quickly lead to merchant enablement. And I think what we're seeing is definitely, frankly, for the reseller community, you're really where the rubber meets the road. You know, there are certified devices, there are certified solutions out there, but we're not seeing necessarily strong enablement in that mid-market SMB space for integrated point of sale, because that POS update cycle takes time, and it's going to take your time and your effort as well as, you know, the merchant's effort. So I think everyone kind of assumed that we'll get solutions to market, we'll see rapid enablement, rapid adoption. I think what we're seeing in the marketplace is a lot of reactive, meaning, you know, you get burned at that chargeback, then you get the phone call to upgrade to EMV. You guys receive that phone call. I think that lesson learned is really, you know, the commercialization, the go-to-market of these EMV solutions is critical. And you guys are the key players in that space.
And to be honest, for any merchants, whether they sell products or provide services, at the end they want to get paid. And if you want, that's the most important piece of the business. That's how they make money. That's how they stay in business. So a little bit of investment, in EMV, in security, encryption as well, That's it's something, you know, they're investing in the solution to minimize the fraud, to eliminate the chargeback in some situations. So it is very important for the merchant to understand. It's not just a matter of standard in the industry that they have to go with to move to EMV, but it's also an investment for their business as well.
As you can tell, all these smart people, they're not quiet. So we kind of have run out of time. I appreciate every one of you for your advice and wisdom. You can see all of these people on the floor, on the show floor. If you have any particular questions, please go visit them at their booth later today. Also, I encourage you to do your survey at the back of your book under it was the first one, the Lessons Learned EMV Implementation. And thank you very much for attending.